What's going on? It's Chris Carino. This is the Voice of the Nets podcast, a weekly podcast where we dive into the Nets and more in conversations with a variety of guests, including players and coaches. Today on the show, we're going to be talking NBA Summer League with Rafael Barlow. He is the director of scouting at NBABigBoard.com. Does a great job for them. You can hear him on the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. You can listen to all your podcast outlets and watch it on YouTube. Rafael does a great job breaking down some of these young players. So we're going to talk to him about some of the Nets rookies and other guys to keep an eye on during the Nets Summer League, which begins on Friday, July 7th. So good hoops talk with Rafael coming up. We're into free agency period right now. We'll comment and talk about all those things as they become official. Hopefully get some of the new players on. The Summer League is going to be coached in Vegas by Trevor Hendry. Trevor became a full-time assistant coach last year with the Nets after being their head video coordinator, guy that really started at the bottom, you know, video guy, was on the staff when Kenny Atkinson was the head coach. And if you know the kind of coach that Kenny Atkinson was, looking at video and not sleeping much, you could only imagine what it was like for Trevor Hendry. But he started on the ground floor, has worked his way up, and now will be the head coach for the Summer League squad and their four games, the guaranteed four games, and then maybe some others starting on Friday, July 7th. So congratulations to Trevor. A big, big summer for Trevor, getting a chance to coach the Summer League team and getting married in August. So best of luck for Trevor, one of the real good ones, Trevor Hendry, and good luck to him in the Summer League. So we're going to talk with Rafael Barlow about the squad that Trevor will coach coming up, and some good NBA basketball talk with Rafael Barlow, scouting director at NBABigBoard.com and the podcast on the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast on YouTube and all your podcast outlets, right here on the Voice of the Nets. Rafael Barlow, NBA draft content creator, podcast host, director of scouting at NBA Big Board. Rafael, thanks so much for coming in here and giving us a few minutes.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for inviting me.
I know you had the podcast as well on the Locked On Podcast Network. The Big Board, you do a lot in terms of studying players, whether they be in the United States, internationally, in preparing people, the Big Board referring to the NBA draft. So I would imagine the last month or so, NBA draft, going into Summer League, I mean, this is your time of the year to shine, Rafael.
Yeah, and we're almost at the finish line, so it's kind of like, you know, you have this big lead up to this, and now it's like, okay, well, next month, what do I do? Okay, I guess I'll focus on 2024 draft. But yeah, this is my time of the year, so it gets really busy. But this is what I work so hard for the previous month just to get up to this point.
Now, the NBA really doesn't stop. Right. I mean, we go right from the NBA Finals to the NBA Draft to Summer League. Maybe there'll be a little lull. But then we're going to have the World Cup, basketball World Championships coming up, and then that'll take us right into training camp in the NBA season. Your world probably doesn't stop much either, though. We talk about this being kind of a busy time, but player evaluation on guys that the NBA will be interested in potentially down the road is something I'm sure is a year long thing that you're studying.
Yeah, you forgot free agency.
That's true. How did I miss that?
Yeah, one of the biggest days of the year, July 1st. But yeah, it's really nonstop. I think the NBA has done a good job of making basketball year round, to where if you're a basketball fan, there's always something going on to look forward to, even if it's just, you know, follow the international players playing in their World Cups or Eurobasket or something like that overseas. But you got to love what the NBA has done for making this such a year-round event.
Is it harder for teams to discover those diamonds in the rough? Not because they're not available or you can't find them, but because everybody has so much information now, everybody sees these players play. It's almost like there's no stone unturned right now, and everybody has access to it. So is there going to kind of be less of these guys that kind of come out of nowhere in your expertise?
I still say there are guys that can come out of nowhere simply because it could just be a guy that develops really, really late. I know on my NBA Big Board newsletter, I did an article about a kid named Vincent Valerio Bolden, who was playing in Hungary, who was 6'9", and he shot over 40% from three. And not many teams had heard of him. Actually, I think he worked out for the Nets, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. And just not many teams had heard of him. He was definitely under the radar, and then came to the States late, didn't have his visa information or whatever, so he couldn't do the combine, but was able to get some workouts. And I think he's playing summer league for a team. So he is, I don't think he's going to be like Jokic or, you know, an NBA star, but he is someone that has slipped under the radar because he didn't come from a country, Hungary, that is known for having like a deep basketball background. So I do think there are guys, depending on where they're at in the world, that can fall under the radar.
Yeah, and I guess you know, as I'm looking at you on our video monitor right now, a lot of people are just listening to this, but I'm looking at you, and behind you, there is a book entitled Giannis behind you, and I guess that would be kind of the dream scenario for teams, for scouts, to find a guy who can develop into, who is going to blossom like Giannis did at some point. So I guess I was trying to say is, you know, everybody knows about everybody now at a very young age, but I guess it's a guy that you can take a chance on young enough that can blossom into that type of player. And I don't know if it's fair for the Giannis comparison with a lot of people, but certainly that's something that gets thrown around now a little bit. Well, you know, Giannis was the 13th pick. Well, look at what Giannis looked like when he was drafted. I think I heard that with Wembanyama. Yeah. Recently, you know, if he can look like Giannis in 5 years, you know, look out. It's a tough comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think with Giannis, it's just the mentality. And I read the book and just his mindset and his desire and willingness to be great is kind of what separates him. Of course, he has the physical tools. And I actually think that there's some players walking around the continent of Africa that have Giannis's physical tools as far as just length and athleticism and so on. But it's just the mindset and the work ethic and the hunger that really separates Giannis. And, you know, the comparison to Wembanyama, I mean, that would be great. I do think that Victor does have that competitive mindset. I think he does want to be great. And so I think that is sort of a fair comparison. Just huge difference. Victor's been on the radar for a long time now, and Giannis really came out of nowhere.
Well, I think Victor, what they were trying to say is that if he can develop his body in close to how Giannis has done it, because Giannis was such a frail guy coming out but he was so young and then developed into this, you know, muscular, lean, powerful guy. I mean, obviously, Wembanyama's got way more skills, I think, than Giannis had when he came into the league. So, yeah, if he can just physically work on himself, then I think that would be, you know, we'll look out for the rest of the league if he can become that strong.
And I think the biggest difference is, you know, from reading Giannis's book, he grew up so poor that the reason why he was so skinny was because he was malnourished. Mm. And I remember reading in the book, they talked about when he was kind of discovered, they took him in, I guess, to do some testing. And the doctor thought it was the body of a 80-year-old man just because he was so malnourished and he wasn't eating. And I think they described it as it would be like putting Coca-Cola in your gas tank of your car. That's just how bad he was eating. So I think for him, just eating, you know, good foods on top of the work ethic and lifting helped him out. So I think Victor does have a bigger deficit in a sense because he has, you know, been eating well, but he didn't have the same background.
He's been in the program since he's, you know, 13, 14 years old and professional leagues there. You know, you mentioned though that desire, that competitiveness, that fire, that drive. You spend a lot of time scouting players before they get to the NBA. You're going to be out in Las Vegas watching summer league guys who are trying to make a mark trying to either make a team or make, you know, enough of an impression that other teams will grab them. How difficult is it for you to identify that fire, that hunger, that passion to make themselves better when you're scouting young 17, 18, 19-year-old players that are trying to make their mark?
Yeah, to me, that's the hardest part of it, just because that doesn't always show up on film. Like, we can watch film and you can see talent. You can see whether a guy has great wingspan, if he's athletic or he can shoot.
Yeah.
But the hard part is, how do you determine what a 19-year-old does once he has a guaranteed contract and he has millions of dollars in the bank?
Yeah.
There's some guys, their goal was to make it to the NBA, right? And once they make it, they're comfortable. So I think that's the hardest part. And I have a theory that when guys are top 10 picks or first round picks and they end up becoming quote unquote bust, I don't think it's talent. I think a lot of it is whether it's injuries, situation, and sometimes it's just the desire or just the difficulty of, you know, you've been a star your whole life. Then you get to the NBA and you're, you know, now the ninth or 10th man, and you go from not getting in games to you don't know when you're going to play again. Mm. Are you mature enough to handle it? Can you handle it professionally? And you're expected to do this at 19, 20 years old. And then you can dig yourself in such a ditch as far as like having a negative perception around your name, but you could be out by 22 or 23, or you're just only getting camp deals and you got to climb out of that hole. So, that's the hardest part. It's just the maturity. And again, we're talking 19-year-olds getting millions of dollars. I mean, think about when we were 19, like if someone gave us like $1 million.
Well, I don't know. I was always like, I was 19 going on 40, which took, maybe I didn't enjoy myself as much when I was 19 as I should have. But yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And I think that it's important also where you end up sometimes. You know, the environment, the coaching staff, the organization, the teammates that you're with. I really do think that's in all sports.
Yeah.
That could really shape a young guy and set him on the right path or set him back. And I think a lot of those times you talk about busts, guys just aren't in the right situation.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I look at it like I heard the story about Allen Iverson when he was with the Sixers. You know, he was Allen Iverson. He was an icon in a sense, but he didn't have the best habits as far as lifestyle, working out. I mean, he was a one of one. I mean, I read that he could eat 17 tacos before a game and still come on and score 40. Well, when he had like a rookie, when Iverson was, what, let's say 28, and then there may have been a rookie that when the guys had come out of high school and that was 19. Mm. Iverson was probably like on your walls, your posters, you wore shoes, you wanted to dress like him. And if he's like, hey, we're going out tonight. I mean, I imagine how many rookies fell for that trap. They stayed out to 5 a.m. But now the team is like, this guy isn't dedicated. I just heard so many different stories like that about young guys that try to keep up with like these crazy elite, talented max player guys. And they couldn't do what they were able to do, and it kind of put them in a situation where they were out the league early.
Yeah, it's funny. I always think of the story that Charles Barkley tells about having Moses Malone as his teammate. And, you know, when Moses kind of said to him, you're fat.
Yeah.
And this is what you have to do. And he would make him come over his house, and they would talk about, you know, how he was going to work on his body and stay ready for game. And Charles Barkley credits Moses Malone for helping him stay in the league. And you think about it, if he doesn't have that teammate, if he gets drafted to another team, maybe it goes in a completely different direction.
Yeah. And think about it in today's game. I think Barkley was the top 5 pick, maybe 4th pick. Mm. If you're a top 5 pick, you're not getting a Moses Malone on your team. Mm. You're going to a team where, you know, your veteran might be 2 years older than you. Mm. So I think that's a huge difference. Or if you do have a veteran on your team, he's not the caliber of Moses Malone or Dr. J.
No.
You're automatically seen as like the face of the franchise in a sense if you're a top 5 pick. So a lot of guys don't have that veteran leadership.
When I look at what the Nets have been trying to do in the post-superstar era, it's, I think, sometimes about building an organization with the kind of culture and character that would enable you to develop young players. And so that when you do get a young player come into the system, it's something that's going to help him grow as a person, as a player. When I see the Nets signing a player like Cam Johnson now to a deal, not letting him go, and with his relationship with Mikal Bridges, I was struck by, you know, recently I interviewed the three Nets draft picks that two of them will be playing in the Summer League in Las Vegas coming up in Noah Clowney and Jalen Wilson from Kansas. And then, you know, Derek Whitehead is still out. He had the procedure done on his foot, so he won't play in the Summer League. But when I talked to all three of these guys, I mean, they were all very different in their personalities, but all very mature and pleasant and good energy about them. Like I was struck by the personalities of all three. And I just want to, you know, go through some of the players that we're going to be seeing with the Nets and in Vegas with you, because you study all these guys. You've been to games, you've watched them, you projected where they might go, what their impact could be in the NBA. Noah Clowney is a soft-spoken, quiet guy. But I found him to be very introspective and thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And people are describing him as like Nick Claxton with a jump shot. I don't know if that's fair to Nick Claxton. I don't know if it's fair to Noah Clowney, but where did you have Noah on the big board, the NBA big board? And what are Net fans looking forward to seeing out of Noah Clowney?
Yeah, I had him in the 20s. I think my last, and you know, I do so many mocks. I think the last one I had him going 23 to Portland.
Okay.
And so he went higher than I. He went 20. Where did he go?
He went 21. The Nets had 21 and 22. So you felt that the Nets would have maybe there was somebody else the Nets might have taken, in your opinion. And then, you know, he would have slipped. But the Nets did take him at 21.
Yeah, I like him a lot. One thing about his story that I like is that even though he was a 4-star recruit, he wasn't someone that was crowned as a one and done. He was considered to be somewhat of a project, maybe a 2 to 3 year player. And he had a really good year. I mean, you round up the numbers, 10 points, 8 rebounds per game, around a block per game. And he has this underdog mentality in a sense, but it's kind of like a quiet underdog. It's not a pound my chest, hey, I wasn't rated high. But I think that he is someone that is mature. He's only 18 years old. He's still 18 years old, doesn't turn 19 till, I guess, in the middle of Summer League. So he'll be celebrating his 19th birthday in Las Vegas, which is, you know, not a bad place to celebrate your birthday.
Well, I mentioned he was the youngest player the Nets had ever drafted until about 4 minutes later when Derek Whitehead, who's about 3 weeks younger than him, was drafted.
Yeah, so I like him a lot. The shooting is interesting because you see the touches there. If you just look at the numbers on paper, then you could say, all right, why are they saying this guy's a shooter? Because then we shot like 28% from three and wasn't like 80% foul shooter. But I do think the touch is there. And if he is Nick Claxton, I mean, Nick took a few years to develop and Nick was not as good as Clowney as a freshman when he was at Georgia.
Yeah, and I think he had mentioned, Clowney mentioned to me that he had a couple of slumps in the middle of the year where he had like an 0 for 19 stretch from three and then an 0 for 21 stretch. So, you know, he felt like that brought his numbers down. But, you know, these days, everybody's looking for a big who can stretch the floor.
Yeah.
So, we'll see what he can become. Like you said, so young. These guys are incredibly young. We're not going to see Derek Whitehead in Summer League, but he was the opposite end of Clowney coming out of high school. I mean, he was the top one or two guys, supposedly, coming out of high school. And an injury kind of set him back. And I would imagine but where do you think his game is going to be in the NBA if, let's say, if I told you, I gave you a crystal ball and said the injury is not an issue, what do you think the kind of player the Nets are getting?
You know, what's interesting about Whitehead is that coming into this season, he was the guy that if I talked to 10 scouts, whether it was guys that just scout grassroots basketball, college, or even NBA, he was the guy that consistently was everyone's favorite interview as far as just personality, maturity. I mean, everybody just really had good things to say, even to the point where even if he had weaknesses, people didn't really want to point them out because they liked the kid so much. And when I watched this film, I'll be honest, I was not the biggest Derrick Whitehead fan of this film. I didn't know how he fit. I saw that he had a bunch of things that he did good, but I didn't see like the one thing that he did that really, really stood out. But I did think that he was going to be a lottery pick. Then he gets the injury. Then he has to play this super reduced role at Duke. He's not himself. And he stands in a corner and he shot like 43% from three. So I actually became higher on Derrick seeing like a scaled down version of himself, because he showed that he can, well, one, he can play with anybody in a sense, because he played at those loaded Montverde teams that had a bunch of guys already in the NBA.
Yeah.
And then he was there like really early. But just in the reduced role, he was a star in his role at Duke as a shooter. And I know he didn't sign up to go to Duke to just be a guy that stands in the corner. Mm-hmm. So I think if he puts it all together, at the minimum, he's your floor spacer, but he can pass, he can handle. And I'm sure the athleticism will look better once he's fully healthy. So I've grown on him since the injury. I'm probably like the opposite. Most people were really high on him before, but he's definitely changed my perception.
Yeah, that's interesting. And a lot of times guys are just so athletic and powerful that they rely on that in high school and they don't develop that.
Yep.
You know, and he had the ability to get out there and shoot the three and, you know, in the role he did. And like you said, you try and get into the, you try and get into the mindset of guys and their psychology. And, you know, you want to know how smart a player they are, and his ability to sort of become a role guy and be a star in his role at Duke, even though it wasn't something he was used to doing. It probably shows you a little bit about who he is as a basketball player in terms of, you know, his basketball IQ that people like to throw around.
Yeah. And like I said, everybody raved about him, and I think he showed it because, like you said, he was the guy. He was, I mean, you can make a case and say he was the highlight or the marquee name in their recruiting class, which was, I mean, it had like four, like five stars.
Yeah.
And he just settled. I mean, Derrick Lively settled for a much smaller role than he probably anticipated too. But I was just really impressed with the shooting.
Yeah. Lively was a guy, I think, that had gone on a lot of Nets, to the Nets and a lot of mocks, but then, you know, he ended up going well higher because I think people see that same thing. Yeah. Like there's this raw talent, and maybe he had a reduced role at Duke, but when you put him in the right system, you know, it could be really strong. Is there still a sort of like, so, you know, when I look at the Nets, Jalen Wilson out of Kansas, who dipped his toe in the NBA, draft the year before and then decided to go back to Kansas and won Big 12 Player of the Year. Is there sort of still this bias? You know, because we talked about the first two guys are 18 years old. And here's Wilson, 22 years old, spent 4 years at Kansas, had a redshirt year. That's why he still had a year of eligibility if he wanted to. But there's almost like we've seen so much of them, there isn't as much upside to look at. But I almost feel like Jalen Wilson's a guy that can come in and help the Nets right away.
Yeah, and I've followed Jalen for years. I live in the Dallas area. This is where he's from. So I've seen him play pickups. I remember when RJ Hampton was like one of the hotter names coming into the draft, and I was filming RJ Hampton to some pre-draft workouts, and Jalen was working out with him. And he's just kind of had a steady climb. I thought he really showed what he's capable of this year. It's kind of like the opposite of what we're talking about with Derrick. Jalen Wilson was on the championship team, and then this past season, he has like this role as Kansas's go-to guy. I mean, he had some big games. The Big 12, in my opinion, I mean, some people may say the Big East, but the Big 12 is the toughest conference in basketball for him to win Player of the Year. He does a little bit of everything. He rebounds. He can pass. He's getting better as a shooter. So he's kind of like in a acquired taste in a sense, because you may look at him and say, well, he doesn't have the same upside as a Clowney or a Whitehead because he's older and he's experienced. But I do think that he can come in, if given the opportunity, can come in and contribute because he does the little things. And if he can knock down open shots, then I think he's really going to be effective because he has the ability to, where if a team is closing out on him, he can make that play. He can be a ball mover, and he hustles. He plays hard. So I think he can help.
Yeah, the director, one of the assistant coaches at Kansas for a very long time, a guy named Fred Quarterbaum, who he played at Fordham when I was there as a student broadcaster. So I know Fred a little bit. And after the draft, he texted me and he sent me a note on Twitter and just said, "This guy's a stud. You're going to love him." So I think we'll see now. And I would expect him, you know, sometimes these guys that are, their game's a little more polished or they're a little more experienced. Like the thing about summer league, I try and project this, Rafael, and you sit there and you watch these summer league games. They can be in one way. Yes. You can see what a guy can do. You can project what he's capable of in the NBA. In some ways, there's a little fool's gold sometimes because of the way players approach summer league. Some guys can stand out, but maybe that doesn't translate to the NBA. When you're watching these summer league games, what does it tell you about how you can project what kind of NBA players they're going to be? I know that's a pretty broad and rangy question there, but maybe you could follow where I'm going with that.
Yeah, it's tough because, for example, we'll use Cam Thomas in a sense, and maybe this is the best
legendary example. Summer League player over the last 2 years.
That role that he plays in Summer League is not the role that he's going to play.
Yeah.
Except when he does get the opportunity, he plays the same role.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Summer League Cam a few times in the NBA this year, including three games in a row where he had 40 or more points.
Yeah, so I think that's just him. But it's usually the guys that score a lot that kind of makes me pause in a sense because they're not going to have that same role. But the guys that knock down open shots or defend, those are the more translatable roles in a sense. So even if it's like a point guard and he's a distributor, he's setting the table, he's picking up guys full court, then you can say, okay, well, maybe he can be a team's backup point guard, 15-minute-a-night guy, because he's going to bring the energy. He's loud. He's a leader. Like I said, those are more projectable. But when I see like the big scoring numbers, it kind of gives me, unless it's like a rookie that was like a lottery pick or something like that, then you know that they're going to get those opportunities. But as far as just like projecting, it's always tough because one, they're not playing against the high level NBA players. Summer league guys, maybe a little bit smaller. You don't have the same size in the NBA, the same athleticism. So it is tough, but I think, like I said, certain things are always going to translate, which is usually shooting, defense, energy, hustle, and so on.
Yeah. And sometimes it's a way for guys to get a look, teams to get a look at players, early on. Like we talked about, you're trying to find those guys that may blossom late. You know, I remember a guy like, you know, the Nets a few years ago had Utah Watanabe. And, you know, play in the summer league. And then you look, you know, he ends up going to a couple other organizations, but then the Nets bring him back. He had a good year last year, although he was, you know, banged up a little bit. I know he's going to be heading out now, but, you know, certainly it's a chance for teams to get a look at some of these guys on their way up and probably notice things that maybe they wouldn't have noticed otherwise, just by having a guy, I guess, be in practice with them, how he interacts with his teammates. Like you said, there's certain things you could just look for on film, and then there's certain things you could look at when you're courtside, but there's other ways where you can look at how a guy operates within your locker room, with your coaches and things like that.
And even maturity. Like I know a story where there was, and I don't think it's like intentional, but Vegas is a place where if you want to see how a guy can handle like the future NBA, you throw him in Vegas in the summer league for a few days. And sometimes you can tell whether a guy is going to make it or not. And I have a friend, and I mean, he just totally blew his opportunity. And I think the team, they knew that he kind of had some character issues, but they knew he was talented enough to maybe be a back end roster player. And you know how like in summer league, you may play one game and then the next game you may not play because some teams may carry like 20 guys on the roster. Well, he was young and made the mistake of thinking, okay, well, I'm not playing today or tomorrow, so I'm going to enjoy Vegas. Goes out all night, comes in 5:00 in the morning. And, you know, the team hotel, like the guys that are decision makers, they're up early in the morning. They may be down in the lobby or Starbucks, whatever, reading nobody reads the paper anymore, but, you know, in the coffee
reading on their phones,
or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, they see you stumbling in late. And you're on a basically a tryout.
Yeah.
then they understand, like, okay, well, he doesn't even have the money yet. Yeah. So I think the summer league can also just be a good test of character. I mean, and I think that a lot of the guys are, they're really on a tryout. And so you have to be your best self. Of course, the guys that are, you know, signed the contracts, they have a little bit more stability. But teams are monitoring everything as far as, like you said, how you interact with your teammates and so on. And this particular guy, another game, since he wasn't playing, he didn't have on like the proper socks underneath his uniform. I mean, just totally blew his opportunity, which, I mean, he's made a good career in Europe, but it's the little things like that, the summer league that aren't really discussed.
Summer league, the Vegas has become sort of this NBA convention,
yeah.
You know, because even the star players now show up,
yep,
and they'll be around, and yeah, you can, it's like the Christmas party in your company. Nobody really will get promoted from the Christmas party probably, but a lot of people eventually down the road will get fired by their behavior at the Christmas party.
I like that analogy. Yeah. That's very true.
Rafael, what do you look for when you're that you can't see by watching these guys on film, that you go to summer league and you sit up close and you're trying to see, project some of these guys, or maybe even are you watching guys and thinking, all right, where did I have them before? Was I wrong about that? Right about that? And, you know, what can you see more of when you've got them all in one place and you're up close and you're in person?
Well, summer league 10 years ago, you used to be able to sit up close and watch and evaluate. Now you're like, you leave your seat to go get something to eat. You may be up in the 300 sections.
So it's amazing how it's grown. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember just being able to sit in the front row at the Thomas and Mack, just be able to walk down. And now it's just tough. But yeah, I look to one, see if there's something maybe I missed. Maybe try to put things in context, or maybe why this guy didn't do this in the college level because he wasn't given the opportunity. I remember last year just being impressed with Chet Holmgren, the few games that he played as a passer and being able to bring the ball up the floor. You didn't really see a lot of that at Gonzaga. And then with Paolo Banchero last year, I was a huge Banchero fan. And I saw in high school, I saw on his high school film that he played like this hybrid point center, and then we saw that in summer league where they let him initiate the offense. So little things like that, to, you know, like for example, I think Jairus Walker for the Pacers, I think they're going to give him some opportunities as a ball handler and a passer because he was really good at that in high school but didn't get a chance to show that with Houston this past season. So I look for that. But summer league is also tough in a sense because if you look at like the top guys, they hadn't played pickup. Their last game was probably in April. So they're usually a little bit out of shape. And I mean, they're in like basketball shape, but during this whole pre-draft process, they're only working out. They're not playing 5-on-5, getting up and down the court. So I put that in the back of my mind. If a guy kind of struggles a little bit, it's because it's his first 5-on-5 contact since the season ended, because, you know, when you're expected to go that high, they're definitely not trying to have you risk any injuries playing 5-on-5. So that's something to look out for. And then just seeing how players react to just the NBA rules, the spacing and the length and the athleticism is probably a little bit better in college. So, I mean, there's so many things that I look out for.
When you look at the, you know, we talked about the rookies that will be playing for the Nets, their draft picks, but on their roster, is there anybody that kind of stands out that you would, that Net fans should kind of be curious to see, or that you're curious to see and maybe a little high on and want to see more of here as we get ready to watch these Vegas Summer League games?
Yeah, there's a few guys. One is Kennedy Chandler. He was someone that I thought was a first round pick last year. I knew the size was going to work against him.
Yeah, 6 foot, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's probably being generous. And I thought that, I mean, he was really good. I want to say he shot like 38% from three in college. I remember his last game against Michigan. He just totally just kind of blew up there, drop coverage, and just his ability to get in the lane. I thought he was a good passer. Then he falls to the second round, which shocked me. But then I thought Memphis felt like they had a steal. He is a hometown kid, and and they gave him like the largest rookie second round contract, I believe. I want to say it was like almost $5 million guaranteed. And then a year later, he's with the Nets summer league team. So I don't know exactly what went wrong in Memphis, but I know he struggled from three, only shot 21% from three in the G League. So he's someone that I'm looking to see if he can make an impact. One thing about the Nets summer league team is that they have a bunch of guys that can pass the ball. It's like either they're looking for shooters or playmakers, and their playmakers aren't like your traditional playmakers. So you got Raekwon Gray, who I'm sure you remember, but he had that 16-9-7 game at the end of the year, which was almost pretty much what he averaged in the G League in assists. I mean, he didn't average 7 assists per game.
Not like a highly athletic guy, but he's got good size and like he's got a skilled kind of old man game a little bit about him.
Yeah, like he's like a, you can't put him in a box. Like when you look at him, you see, okay, this guy's going to be like this below the rim finisher, bruiser. Then you see like he's, a natural playmaker. And then there's Jordan Hall, who I liked out of St. Joe's, another guy that is just a big natural playmaker, loves to play fast. And he's a respectable shooter. It's just, that's pretty much all he can do. Like, he doesn't really do much inside the paint. I would even guess 50% of his shots with the Long Island Nets, or not, sorry, not Long Island, but Austin Spurs were threes. And he shot about 35, 36, which is pretty consistent with you know, how he shot at St. Joe's. But I think he has some versatility. He's going to be interesting to watch. And then as far as like the shooters, Matt Lewis is a good shooter. I think he's been in the high 30s his, you know, 2 years playing professionally. And then there is Armani Brooks.
Yeah.
And someone told me a few weeks back that I guess he did a mini camp with the Nets and they liked him enough to where they just told him to stay. And so he had a good run in Houston at one point. But I think he has a role as a defiant shooter. So I think if he shoots the ball well, that he may be someone that can stick.
Probably a guy with, I know Armani Brooks is a name people would know. So it's, I think it'd be interesting to watch him play with them. Are you scouting the weather report in Las Vegas, Raphael? Are you ready for the heat?
Well, I had just had this conversation and I was in New York for the draft and it was nice. And then I get back to Dallas and it's like 100 and something.
Yeah. You've had some ridiculously hot weather.
Though. It's like 102. And then I look at Vegas and I normally don't have to look at the temperature in Vegas because you just know it's going to be hot. But then I saw one day, I think it said it was going to be like 113. And I was like, oh my gosh.
It's a dry heat though.
It's a dry, well, to me, hot is hot. Like I hear people say it's a dry heat or it's humid, like hot is hot. But what I'm more concerned about is what the temperature is going to be in the Thomas and Mac. Is it going to be 30 degrees or is it going to be 35?
Do they crank up the AC in the Thomas and Mac?
Oh my gosh, it's so cold. Like it's freezing in there. And I get it because, you know, it's so hot outside. But I mean, you really have to bring a sweatshirt because if you're staying there all day like I do, it's cold. It's freezing.
Maybe it's just the contrast of being outside and you come in, it just feels cold.
No, it's cold. All right. It's freezing in there. And then you go outside to, you know, try to warm up and then you warm up instantly and then you go back in. So if anybody's listening, bring a sweatshirt or something. Just have it with you because if you plan on being there all day, you're going to need it.
All right. And make sure you stay away from all the pitfalls of Las Vegas before you get out.
Yeah. I don't gamble. I can't afford to lose any money. So Vegas is not a temptation city for me.
All right. Well, that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. Raphael Barlow, we really appreciate you giving us a few minutes here and giving us your thoughts on some of what to watch for the Nets this year and Summer League and some other good stuff. I enjoyed our conversation. Again, you can see all of Raphael's stuff, NBA Big Board, the NBA Big Board podcast on Locked On Sports Network. Is there anything else that you want people to know about where they can find you and watch your stuff that you'll be, I would imagine, reporting things from Summer League as we go along?
Yeah, I have the NBA Big Board newsletter, And I have a preview of, you know, all the summer league, starting off with the California Classic, which is coming up with the Nets aren't playing in. But then I have the Vegas one, and then I'll be doing recaps on my podcast. And it's also on YouTube. If you just type in Locked On NBA Big Board, you can find it on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. So if you like draft related content, I know the draft is over, but if you like content regarding like the rookies or players in the draft, you'll be able to get at least, for the next few weeks, at least 7 forms of content from me in a week. So it's a lot, but I really enjoy what I do.
That's awesome, Raphael. It's and on Twitter at Barlow, Barlowe 500 on Twitter. If you have enough views left on Twitter to find it, I know it has, people have seen it's been restricted now. Like you can only look at a certain number of tweets a day.
I'm in trouble.
And incredible that they would decide to do this right as NBA free agency frenzy gets going. Right, this is just I don't know if Elon Musk is an NBA fan. Probably not.
Can't be.
No. appreciate it, Raphael. Thank you so much for your insight here. And again, check out Raphael's stuff on YouTube, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. Raphael, really appreciate joining us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
All right, my thanks to Raphael Barlow, NBABigBoard.com, on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank Raphael for his insight there on the Nets Summer League team that'll be getting going on Friday, July 7th. All the games either on NBA TV or ESPNU, ESPN2. You can check out the Nets in the Summer League. Want to just in closing, I always give you a little something to watch or listen to. This is an homage to someone we lost this week, the great Alan Arkin. You talk about a two-way player, a guy who could be comedic and dramatic. Alan Arkin, passing away at the age of 89, nominated for 4 Academy Awards, won one, and I think my favorite movie of all time in Alan Arkin, and we'll refer to it. I quote this movie all the time during our Nets broadcast, The In-Laws. Tim Capshaw will point out a team Z-ing the ball around the court, and I'll say, a Z? Great film, late 70s. He was also nominated as Best Lead Actor for his first feature role as a lead actor, one of the handful of people ever to do that. Back in the late 60s, a film called The Russians Are Coming, kind of a really goofy comedy, but he was nominated for Best Actor. And if there's something you could watch, the last role of his career, a show called The Kominsky Method on Netflix, where he was in the twilight of his career, and it was a poignant performance. Little Miss Sunshine, another one, great performance, where he was nominated for an Academy Award. So rest in peace to the great Alan Arkin. Something for you to dive into, perhaps in the summer when you got a little time off. You know, if you enjoy our program here on the podcast, The Voice of the Nets, really would appreciate it if you can go on your Apple Podcast, if you're listening on the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star review, maybe a little comment, and subscribe if you're feeling a little generous. The Spotify app, you can give us a 5-star review as well. We really appreciate some feedback, especially if it's good. Thank you so much. Thanks to our producer, Steve Goldberg, our engineer, Isaac Lee. We'll talk to you again next time. I'm Chris Carino, and this is The Voice of the Nets.